Hello, hello, welcome back. I'm now joined on the telephone by Guillermo Fare, aka Wild Honey, whose album, Torres Blancas, his third album, is our album of the week for this week. Welcome to the show, Guillermo. Thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks so much for having me on your show.
It's a real pleasure because the album is so wonderful, and it's one that you've produced. Well, it's your third album, as I've already said, and it's the first one on which you're speaking, or singing rather, in Spanish. These are all points on which I'm going to pick you up on, and you had a lot of input from Sean O'Hagan, formerly from Stereo Lab, and now the High Llamas, and there is a real feel of a certain Stereo Lab-ness to it. I mean, it's not overly similar, but to be very nerdy and just start off on a very particular particular point. The use of something like the hi-hat on the drums, which kind of gives it this sort of electrified sound that sounds a lot, there's similarities to the album Peng, Stereo Lab.
Yeah.
What was it like working with Sean O'Hagan, and what was the kind of, how did you divide up the input? What did he bring in his orchestral arrangements? How did you work together? What was it like?
Well, first of all, I'm a super fan of Stereo Lab, so if you find something in the sound that reminds you of Stereo Lab, I'm so glad about that. what I love about Stereo Lab, in fact, is that they looked at the past because they were very music nerds, and they discovered a lot of music from music library and all different genres. But at the same time, they made their own sound, and they tried to sound contemporary to when they were releasing music. And I like having the same philosophy. I love music. I love trying to find new songs, new sounds in the past. But I always try to sound to a band or to a musician that makes music in 2017. So I think I shared with them this feeling. And regarding Sean O'Hagan, I'm also a big fan of the High Llamas, and I've been following their career for a long time. I think they were one of the first bands that started to put the Beach Boys in the mid-90s as one of the big composers, because for such a long time, the Beach Boys were seen maybe as a more cheesy band, and suddenly they were started to be compared to the Beatles, and they were like one of the biggest bands in the history of music. So I think they did a great job there, and I love the sound. And I got in contact with Sean O'Hagan, and I sent him what I say is a fan email, because I started saying how much I love his music and everything. And I asked him if he was open to arrange songs, if he was doing that kind of job. And he said, yes, of course, but I need to listen to your music. So I sent him some demos, and he sent me some notes, and we started to, you know, work as pen pals on distance. And he wrote the arrangement for 4 songs, and it was amazing. I mean, to see your own songs taken to another level by a musician like Sean O'Hagan is one of the most amazing things I've been part of in my life as a musician. So I think the 4 songs that he arranged really stick out, and I've learned so much during the process. So I'm very happy with that.
I mean, it must have been incredible, because he adds these sort of arrangements that he has create these beautiful layers in your song, and it's a very rich texture. And I wanted to ask you also about your work with Frank Maston as well. And I wondered, who's bringing what? Because there's also, in this texture, there's quite a sort of breezy kind of cassette-like feel, a very sort of vintage feel. And I wondered if that was something that Frank was bringing in particular, and what he in particular brought to the sound.
Yeah, definitely he brought a lot of that sound. And normally I work on my own home studio. So working on your own is great, because you don't have to schedule time with other people. You can record whenever you want. But at the same time, it gets boring sometimes, because you don't have someone to talk ideas with. And I always have the fear that I'm repeating myself, that I go after the same sound. So working with someone like Frank Maston, that I'm also a big fan of his records, there was this possibility of talking with someone, learning new techniques. He used a lot of tape delay on almost everything. So when I brought some of the tracks that I've been working I've been working with, he almost used many different effects, not to make those sounds like real sounds. So for instance, with the strings, even though you can understand that they are strings. I get asked a lot if they are real strings or they are samplers or if they are Mellotron. And it's interesting in a time when, especially when you use pre-recorded sounds, many bands and many sounds are the same, and you can say, okay, this comes from here, or this is an effect that I found somewhere. Marston works in a different way. He uses all these machines and effects on his own, and he wants the sounds to change and be unique. And I think that some of the songs has this unique sound thanks to all this process.
Just a fantastic combination of forces here working on this music then. And to have someone take the sound that you've made, or at least the melody and the harmony, the bare bones of it, and then to change the sound slightly must give you then a new idea, a new kind of stimulus to work on, rather than, you know, working alone, as you're saying, getting bored and just having your own sound just coming back at you. To have someone else work on it must actually help you write the songs as well beyond that.
Definitely. And for me, every album, every EP that I make, my approach is, okay, I'm going to make music, but I'm going to learn something in the process, because every new technique that you learn, or software, or every instrument brings something new to the table. And maybe it's not that evident for people when they listen to my music, because there are some coherence record to record. But at the same time, I know that ideas come from new instruments, ideas come from working with new people, and ideas come from listening to sounds in a different way. So that's why I always try to work with people that I admire. So in a way, I think I'm stealing their magic a little bit. So all the techniques and all the things that they know, but it's a way for me to be inspired. And for instance, after working with Frank Maston for a week with him, I brought all the tracks back with me, and I ended up changing some of the structures because I liked the sounds, and they had more protagonism in the song. So yeah, I like that kind of process, and it makes making music something more interesting and a way of learning something new.
Sure, absolutely. And you've also worked with Isabel Reveriego, a.k.a. Aries, and she features on the track Horoscopo. And but as with your music, her music is often talked of with regards to a kind of return to 60s optimism. And you've spoken a bit about your passion for the past, just like Sean earlier. Do you feel that your music functions in this way as a kind of optimistic, perhaps return to, 60s, 70s optimism?
Yeah, for sure. I listen to many different kinds of music. For instance, I'm really into modern R&B. But if I am fair, my favorite period of music goes from 65 to 69 in many different parts of the world. I love Tropicalia movement in Brazil, but I love all the psychedelic music made on the West Coast in America. And I share that interest with Isabel from Aries. It's interesting because I know Isabel from way back when we were almost teenagers, and we both played on punk rock bands. And we love the Beach Boys, Love, and all these kinds of bands. And even though she's now making more electronic music and I'm more this kind of psychedelic pop, we share a lot of influences. And when we meet, we can't stop recommending each other's songs. So I really share an interest with her there.
Good. Well, it comes across, and all the sort of the collaborations with various people. Well, Anita Steinberg, less of a collaboration, more part of the sort of the Wild Honey sound from day one, works extremely well. Vocals with you as well. As you know, I'm a big fan of the album. I don't need to say things like this. But if I can ask you about the name, Torres Blancas, because this is a building built in 1968. I looked it up. I think that's right. And it looks to me very, it looks to me very sort of dystopian and futuristic, and possibly, slightly sort of Blade Runner-esque, or, in some sort of horrible urban future where, there are no fields or something like that. Does it manifest itself in the album? Is it a slightly dystopian, eerie album? And has the building or the architecture of Madrid influenced it in any way, the sound?
Yeah, I made this record in a period of my life when I wanted to leave Madrid so bad. I've been living in the city for 10 years. I've been with my girlfriend for more than 10 years in the same work. And I don't know, I had this urge to go somewhere else. And there are things very interesting of Madrid that maybe you take for granted. I mean, if you live in any city of the world, it becomes a routine. So you don't have time to look around you and see what makes the city amazing or incredible. And this building, Torres Blancas, it's an amazing and, as you say, almost dystopian building in one part of Madrid. And I pass through that building almost every day. And if it's part of the landscape, you don't take notice because you take it for granted. But one day I look up and I say, no, this is amazing. If I find this in a movie, I wouldn't believe it. Or if I'm walking around in a foreign city and I find this building, I would take thousands of pictures of it. So part of the spirit of the album is thinking about Madrid and the bad things and the good things that it has, and how even not just in Madrid but in your everyday life you take things for granted, and there are beautiful things around you, and even if this beauty is not always obvious, as you said before, the building could be something like a threatening figure because it's weird, it's big. It doesn't have the normal shapes, but at the same time, it is amazing. So I like also that on music. I like the kind of music where maybe there's beauty on that, but there is weirdness. And I think it reflected many different things, the building. That's why I made that song, and I ended up calling the album Torres Blancas.
I think it's music that, in a way, keeps you at arm's length. It kind of, it's not, unpleasant harmonically or anything, or unpleasant at all, but it doesn't quite let you in. It's slightly mysterious, slightly unpredictable, a lot like the building. Perhaps you don't warm to it perhaps immediately. It's slightly terrifying in a sense. But something that maybe an artistic, well, certainly an artistic decision rather than a business decision. Sometimes you get people singing in English so that one day they have a tour in America, or whatever. You have decided to sing in Spanish for the first time on an album. What does this bring artistically? Are you more able to express yourself in your mother tongue? I mean, I suppose you are. Does this how has this influenced the album?
Well, I've been writing songs in English for many years since I started making songs when I was 16, 17. Back then, I listened to a lot of American punk rock and British punk rock. That was my jam back then. And for me, music was sung in English. So the reaction was, okay, I should sing in English too, even if I didn't talk or speak English very well back then. But it was like a game. You wrote songs and you wrote them in English. And I ended up doing Wild Honey, and the songs were in English, etc. But there is a point when you make music, and I had already made two albums with Wild Honey, that you need ideas or new challenges. And I had never written a song in Spanish, but it was like when you start a new instrument and you switch the guitar to a piano. A piano, there are different chords, there are different approaches to how music sounds and all the sounds. And I think with a language, it's been the same process for me. Singing in Spanish, of course, you have more resources because it's your mother tongue, and it's easier to find alternatives to rhythm and to rhyme, etc. And so it's been great. It's been a creative tool to sing in Spanish and write in Spanish. And one of the reasons why I think I'm really happy with the result of the album is that I feel it's more honest in a way, because you end up talking about things that normally you don't talk about when you're writing in a foreign language. And it's very interesting because with previous records, even though they were sung in English, the reception outside of Spain was limited. But with this new record sung in English, for instance, the BBC Six has been playing the record a lot. And I think that it makes it a little bit more unique. I mean, when I sing in English, there are many different people singing in English and making this kind of music. So I guess that when I speak on my mother tongue and I make this kind of music, at least it's interesting. But I'm really surprised that, for instance, you are talking about this album, or BBC is talking about this album. So I'm happy and surprised.
Don't question it. Let it happen. And that's great that BBC Six are playing it. If BBC Six are playing it and E Radio not are playing it, then that's the only seal of approval you need. That's
exactly.
That's
great news. Yeah.
You must be very pleased. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. The album's fantastic. I've enjoyed playing it every day. It really is very nice indeed. So congratulations on that. Thank you again for talking to us, Guillermo Fari.
And thank you again for having me on your show.
Absolute pleasure. All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
You're listening to English for Everyone. Tweet us and follow us on Instagram at EU Radio English. And find us on Facebook, EU Radio Nantes English. 101.3 FM.